A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been reorganizing his garage, got himself some Euro boxes, and he's asking the question that hits basically everyone who's ever held a drill. Once you've got the bins, what actually goes where? He wants to know if there's a real logic to dividing up a tool inventory. What systems exist? What's the thinking? How do you avoid ending up with six boxes labeled miscellaneous?
This is one of those questions where the surface answer is simple and the real answer is a rabbit hole that goes down to the floor of the garage and then through it. And I love it.
Of course you do. You've been waiting for this one.
I have not been waiting for this one. I have been prepared for this one. There's a difference.
Is there, though?
Waiting implies passivity. Preparation implies I have opinions about drawer layouts that I've been refining since the 90s.
Where do we start? I think the first thing most people do wrong is they organize by tool type. All the screwdrivers together, all the wrenches together. And that seems logical, until you're actually doing a project, and you're walking back and forth across the garage 12 times.
This is the fundamental organizing principle that separates a garage that works from a garage that looks organized in photos. The core question isn't, what is this thing? It's, when do I reach for this thing?
Say more about that.
Adam Savage, his whole system is built around what he calls first-order retrievability. Anything you use frequently should be reachable without moving anything else. No stacking, no digging, no lifting one thing to get to another. You open a drawer or a bin, and the thing is right there.
Which sounds obvious, until you realize how much of your garage violates it.
Most people's garages are archaeological sites. The stuff they use weekly is buried under the stuff they use annually, which is buried under the Christmas decorations. The default organizing instinct is to group by category, all paints together, all fasteners together, all cutting tools together, which makes intuitive sense but creates these dense, deep stacks where you're always excavating.
The Tutankhamun approach to finding a Phillips head.
The curse of the Pharaoh's socket set. But the alternative is organizing by workflow or by project type. Instead of a bin labeled screwdrivers, you have a bin labeled electrical that has the screwdrivers you use for electrical work, plus the wire strippers, plus the voltage tester, plus the wire nuts. Everything you need to do one kind of task lives together.
Which does create duplication. You got screwdrivers in three different bins.
That's actually fine. The cost of a couple extra screwdrivers is nothing compared to the cost of 20 minutes searching through a bin that's 4 feet deep. Time is the real inventory cost, not the $12 screwdriver. The home garage isn't a factory floor. The primary bottleneck is your own working memory and your own patience.
The home garage has different constraints than a professional shop.
In a professional shop, you have dedicated stations, standardized workflows, the same person doing the same task hundreds of times. Tool placement gets optimized through repetition. In a home garage, you might do electrical work 3 times a year, plumbing twice, drywall repair once. You don't have the repetition to build muscle memory. So the system has to be legible at a glance, not just efficient for a practiced user.
The system has to explain itself to you when you come back to it after 6 months.
Which is why labeling matters enormously, but also why the categories themselves have to be intuitive. If you have to remember your own categorization scheme, you've already lost.
Walk me through what a workflow-based organization actually looks like. I've got power tools, paint jars, bins of fasteners, some plumbing stuff, some electrical. What's the first cut?
The first cut is almost always frequency. Before you even think about categories, you do the triage pass. Everything goes into one of three buckets: weekly, monthly, yearly. Or constant access, occasional access, deep storage.
Be honest about it.
The heat gun you used once in 2019 is not monthly. The tile saw you bought for the bathroom reno and haven't touched since is deep storage. Most people's constant access zone should be surprisingly small, maybe 20 or 30 items. The drill, the impact driver, the most common screwdrivers, a hammer, a tape measure, a utility knife, the shop vac.
I think people resist this because it feels like admitting defeat. Putting the router in deep storage is acknowledging you're not going to become a master woodworker this year.
There's an aspirational component to garage clutter. Every tool is a tiny promise to a future self. Organizing by frequency forces you to confront which promises you're actually keeping. It's uncomfortable but useful. Once you've done that triage, the constant access stuff gets prime real estate. Eye level, no bending, ideally on a wall or in a shallow drawer. The monthly stuff goes in the Euro boxes at waist height or below. The yearly stuff goes high up or in the back corners.
Then within those frequency zones, you apply the workflow grouping.
Within the monthly zone, you might have a bin for painting. Brushes, rollers, tray, painter's tape, drop cloths all together. A bin for drywall repair. Joint compound, putty knives, sanding sponges, mesh tape. A bin for plumbing. Pipe wrench, plumber's tape, basin wrench, the little drain snake. Each bin is a self-contained mission.
What about fasteners? That's the one that always gets out of control. Every household accumulates the random jar of screws that's 50% drywall screws, 30% things you can't identify, and 20% hope.
Fasteners are their own special category of chaos. The jar of random screws is not a system, it's a surrender.
The white flag of home ownership.
The fix is counterintuitive. You don't sort fasteners by type. You sort them by size range and by material. One bin is small machine screws, metric. One bin is wood screws, 1 to 2 inches. One bin is bolts and washers, 1/4 inch and up. When you're looking for a fastener mid-project, your question is almost never, do I have an M4 by 16 millimeter pan head? Your question is, do I have something roughly this long and roughly this thick that won't rust?
If you've sorted by exact spec, you have 47 tiny compartments, most of which are empty, and none of which contain quite the right thing anyway.
Maintaining that level of granularity is a part-time job. The hardware store already exists. You don't need your garage to be a hardware store. You need it to get you through the project without a trip to the hardware store. Those are different goals.
That's a really useful framing. Your garage is not a warehouse, it's a buffer.
The warehouse model says stock every possible variant. The buffer model says stock enough to keep working. And the buffer model is what makes sense for a household.
Let's get into the Eurobox thing specifically, because Daniel mentioned he's picked some up. I know you have opinions about modular storage standards.
I have an entire taxonomy of opinions. The Eurobox is absolutely not just a plastic bin. It's a bin that participates in an ecosystem. The Euro Container System, sometimes called the KLT system, from the German Kleinladungsträger, is built around a footprint that's a multiple of a base unit, 300 by 200 millimeters, or 400 by 300, or 600 by 400. They all stack. They all interlock. They're designed to work with standardized shelving, dollies, lids, dividers. Once you commit to the standard, everything you add later just works with everything you already have.
Which is the exact opposite of the typical garage experience, where you buy bins from 3 different stores over 5 years, and nothing stacks, and the lids are all slightly wrong.
Half the lids have vanished into some parallel dimension, but the Eurobox system sidesteps that because the lids are part of the standard. You can buy replacements. They haven't changed the design in decades. It's the storage equivalent of buying a Glock. The aftermarket is enormous and consistent.
That's a very specific comparison.
It's accurate. But the real advantage for the kind of organization we're talking about is that it enforces modular thinking. When all your bins are the same footprint family, you can reconfigure. You can move a bin from the painting shelf to the plumbing shelf, and it just fits. You're not playing Tetris with mismatched containers. The bins become a kind of interface. You stop thinking about, where does this object go, and start thinking about which mission does this object serve.
The bins are clear or labeled, so you can see what's in them.
Clear bins with labels. The clear plastic lets you see the general contents at a glance, and the label tells you the category without having to interpret the visual clutter. Spending an extra $3 per bin on the version with the label slot pays back enormously over time.
What about the specialty automotive storage Daniel mentioned? The Sortimo, the Sustainer stuff.
Sustainer is basically the Festool ecosystem, and it's brilliant but expensive and optimized for professional tradespeople transporting tools to job sites. The Sustainers click together, they're rugged, they've got the T-lock latches. But for a stationary home garage, you're paying a premium for portability you don't need. Sortimo is similar. It's van racking, it's mobile workshop, it's fantastic engineering, but it's solving a problem most homeowners don't have.
The problem of, I need my entire workshop to fit in a Mercedes Sprinter.
The Eurobox gives you 90% of the modularity at about 20% of the cost. For home use, the remaining 10% of functionality, the rugged latches, the weather sealing, the integrated dollies, just doesn't matter.
There's a middle ground, right? The consumer-grade modular stuff at the hardware store.
Right, and this is where it gets tricky. The big box stores have all introduced their own systems. DeWalt Tough System, Milwaukee Packout, Rigid Pro Gear, Craftsman Trade Stack. These are all proprietary ecosystems. They're durable, well-designed, they stack securely. But they're walled gardens. Once you buy into Packout, you're in Packout. If Milwaukee discontinues a component or changes the latch design, you're stuck.
The printer ink model of garage storage.
And the Eurobox is the open standard. Nobody owns it. Nobody can discontinue it. It's been in production since the 1970s, and it's not going anywhere because it's used across European industry, automotive, logistics, manufacturing. The standard is maintained by the VDA, the German Association of the Automotive Industry. It's about as future-proof as a plastic box can be.
Which matters more than people think. The half-life of a proprietary storage system is about 5 to 7 years before the manufacturer tweaks the design, and your old bins don't play nice with the new ones.
That's if the product line survives at all. How many garage storage systems from the 90s are still supported? The bins are orphaned. The lids are lost. You're back to square one.
The Eurobox is basically the Linux of garage storage.
That's actually a really good analogy. It's not the flashiest. It's not the one with the biggest marketing budget. But it's open, it's stable, it's got a massive install base, and it'll still be here in 30 years.
All right, so someone's convinced. They've got their Euroboxes, they've done the frequency triage, they've grouped by workflow. What are the actual tips for making the system stick? Because this is where I see people fail. They set up a beautiful system, and 6 months later it's chaos again.
This is the maintenance question, and it's the hardest part. The first principle is that every item has exactly one home. Not the screwdriver usually lives in this drawer, but sometimes it ends up on the workbench and that's fine. If it's not in its home, it's lost. This sounds rigid, but it's the only thing that prevents entropy.
It's the Marie Kondo approach applied to a garage.
The underlying inside is sound. When an object doesn't have a designated home, it migrates. It follows the path of least resistance. It ends up on the nearest horizontal surface. And pretty soon, every horizontal surface is a graveyard of orphaned tools.
The flat surface problem.
One of the great enemies of garage organization. Any flat surface will accumulate objects until it's no longer flat. The only solution is to eliminate flat surfaces or be ruthless about clearing them. Adam Savage has this rule, clean as you go, not after you're done. Every time you finish a step in a project, you put the tools back. Not at the end of the day, not when the project is finished.
Which requires the tools to be easy to put back. If putting something away requires moving three other things, you won't do it.
This is why first-order retrievability is also first-order put-away ability. If the home for an object is accessible without friction, you're far more likely to return it. If the home is behind a stack of bins that have to be unstacked, you won't. You'll put it on the workbench, and then the flat surface problem wins.
What about labeling? I've seen people go overboard. The label maker comes out and suddenly every bin has a QR code and a 47-item manifest.
The label maker is a dangerous tool in the wrong hands. I've seen garages where the labeling system is so elaborate that maintaining it becomes a hobby unto itself, separate from actually doing projects. That's a failure mode.
It's organizational cosplay.
I love that. The point of organizing your garage is to enable projects, not to have a photogenic garage. If you're spending more time maintaining the inventory system than using the tools, the system has become the point, and that's backwards.
What's the right level of labeling?
The label should answer the question you're actually asking when you're standing in front of the shelf holding a cot gun and wondering where it goes. That question is almost never, what is the full inventory of this bin? It's, does this bin contain the category of thing I'm holding? So the label says painting or electrical or plumbing repair. Maybe with a Sharpie on masking tape. It doesn't need to be beautiful. It needs to be legible.
If one bin says electrical and the next one says wires and stuff, your future self is going to hate you.
Your future self is the person you're organizing for. You're not organizing for the you who knows where everything is right now. You're organizing for the you who is going to open the garage at 9 p.m. on a Saturday, frustrated, holding a leaky P-trap, and needing to find the plumbing bin in under 10 seconds.
That version of you is not at your cognitive best.
That version of you is tired, annoyed, and possibly bleeding slightly, designed for that person.
We've talked about frequency triage, workflow grouping, the Eurobox standard, the labeling approach. What about the inventory system Daniel mentioned? He has a home inventory system, but there's no real order to how things are arranged. How do you bridge the gap between having an inventory and having an organization?
An inventory and an organization are different things. An inventory tells you what you have. An organization tells you where to find it. You can have a perfect inventory, every screw, every brush cataloged in a spreadsheet, and still not be able to find anything because the inventory doesn't encode location.
It's a map without a you are here dot.
The fix is to make the inventory spatial. Instead of a flat list, you have zones. Zone A is the constant access wall. Zone B is the monthly bins on the shelving unit. Zone C is the deep storage above the rafters. Every item gets a zone code. And within each zone, every bin gets a number or a name. So the inventory entry for the heat gun isn't just heat gun, it's heat gun, zone C, bin 4. Now the inventory actually tells you where to go.
The bin itself is labeled with its number or name.
Ideally with a short list of major contents on a card slipped into the label slot. The inventory app or spreadsheet holds the full detail. The bin label holds the quick reference. You don't have to open a laptop to find the cock.
This is starting to sound like a warehouse management system.
It is a warehouse management system, just scaled down to a two-car garage. And the reason warehouse management systems exist is that humans are terrible at remembering where they put things. We think, oh, I'll remember. I put the router in the back corner behind the Christmas decorations. And then it's June and you have no idea.
The I'll remember fallacy.
The I'll remember fallacy has cost humanity millions of hours of garage searching. It's up there with, I'll do it later, and this stack of bins probably won't fall over.
What about digital tools? There are apps now that let you photograph items, tag them, assign locations.
The challenge is the data entry burden. If it takes 30 seconds to add an item to the app, and you have 500 items in your garage, that's over 4 hours of data entry before you've organized anything. Most people give up after item 40.
The system has to be low friction to populate.
Extremely low friction. My recommendation is to skip the per item inventory and just inventory at the bin level. Each bin gets a name and a rough category. Bin 7, painting supplies. You can always drill down later if you need more granularity. But the bin level inventory gets you 90% of the benefit for about 10% of the effort.
It's maintainable. The per item inventory breaks the moment you use something and don't update the app.
Which is immediately. The per-item inventory is a snapshot of a moment in time, and that moment is before you started your next project. The bin-level inventory survives project work because you're not tracking individual items. You're tracking categories. You use a paintbrush, you put it back in the painting bin. The bin still contains painting supplies. The inventory is still accurate. No update required.
That's elegant. It's the difference between tracking atoms and tracking containers.
Containers are the right level of abstraction for a home garage. This is a deep principle from logistics. You manage at the level of the smallest, independently useful unit. In a home garage, that's the bin, not the screwdriver.
Let's talk about some specific cases that trip people up. You got quart cans, gallon cans, spray cans, touch-up jars, and half of them are half empty and dried out.
Paint is its own special circle of garage hell. The first rule is that you never store paint you're not going to use. If the room has been repainted and you kept the leftover can, just in case, and it's been 3 years, you're not going to use it. The color won't match anyway because the paint on the wall has faded.
Harsh but fair.
The second rule is that paint cans are terrible storage containers. They rust, they're hard to open, you can't see how much is left. If you're keeping paint, transfer it to a clear, airtight container, a mason jar or a dedicated paint storage container, and label it with the color name, the brand, the sheen, and the date. Then store it upside down. It creates an airtight seal and prevents skinning.
That's a good tip.
The third rule is that spray paint is a completely different category from liquid paint and should be stored separately. Spray paint has different failure modes. The nozzles clog, the cans lose pressure, they're temperature sensitive. They need to be stored upright in a cool, dry place, not in a bin with wet paint supplies where a leak can glue everything together.
The leak scenario is one of those things you don't think about until it happens, and then you think about it constantly.
A single quart of spilled paint can destroy an entire bin of supplies. Store paint containers inside a secondary containment, a plastic tray or a larger bin, so if they leak, the damage is contained.
What about power tools? You've got the drill, the circular saw, the sander, and then all the batteries and chargers and bits and blades.
Power tools are the most expensive category in most home garages and also the most disorganized. The mistake is storing the tool separate from its consumables. The circular saw is in one place, the blades are in another, the batteries are on a charger somewhere else. You end up making three trips just to make one cut.
The scatter pattern.
The fix is to think of each power tool as a kit. The drill lives with its batteries, its charger, and its most used bits. The sander lives with its sandpaper. If you're using Euro boxes, each tool or tool family gets its own bin with everything it needs to operate. You grab one bin, you have everything.
What about tools that share batteries, like a whole ecosystem? Drill, impact driver, reciprocating saw, all on the same battery platform.
Then the batteries and charger get their own bin in the constant access zone, because they're used across multiple tools. The tools themselves still get their own bins with their specific consumables. But the shared resource, the batteries, lives where everyone can reach it easily.
The shop vac is its own organizational challenge. The hose, the extensions, the crevice tool. It's a whole ecosystem of plastic tubes that don't fit neatly into any bin.
The shop vac is the platonic ideal of awkward to store. My recommendation is a dedicated wall hook or corner where the vac lives fully assembled with all its attachments clipped to the body or hanging immediately adjacent. The shop vac is a constant access item. You use it for cleanup on almost every project, so it deserves prime real estate. The attachments should never be stored separately from the vac, because then you won't use them. You'll just use the bare hose and be annoyed.
The bare hose annoyance is a universal human experience.
It's avoidable with about $6 worth of spring clips and a piece of pegboard.
Speaking of pegboard, is pegboard still a thing? It feels like the default garage wall surface from the 1950s.
Pegboard is absolutely still a thing, and it's having a renaissance because people have figured out that the problem was never the pegboard itself. It was the terrible hooks. The old school wire hooks would fall out every time you grabbed a tool, and after the third time, you'd just leave the tool on the bench.
The hook failure cascade.
Now there are pegboard systems with locking hooks, with integrated bins, with magnetic strips. The French cleat system is also popular. You mount a slanted rail on the wall and then build custom holders that hang on it. It's infinitely reconfigurable and rock solid. Adam Savage's entire workshop is built on French cleats.
French cleats seem like a lot of work to set up initially.
But the setup cost is high and the ongoing benefit is also high. If you rearrange your workspace frequently as your tools and projects change, French cleats are worth it. If you're going to set up your garage once and leave it for 10 years, pegboard with good hooks is fine.
What about the stuff that doesn't fit neatly in the bins at all? The ladder, the sawhorses, the long clamps, the extension cords, the garden tools.
This is the awkward long things category, and the solution is almost always vertical storage on walls or from the ceiling. Ladders hang horizontally on heavy-duty wall brackets. Sawhorses fold flat against the wall. Long clamps go on a dedicated clamp rack, basically a piece of lumber mounted to the wall with notches. Extension cords go on hose reels or large wall hooks in a figure-eight pattern so they don't tangle. Garden tools go in a vertical rack with the business end down so they don't fall on you.
The business end down principle feels like it should be obvious, but I've seen a lot of garages where it's not applied.
Gravity is not your friend in a garage. Sharp things fall pointy end down if given the chance.
We've covered a lot of ground. Is there anything we're missing? A category that people consistently mess up?
The one I see people mess up constantly is the project in progress problem. You're halfway through building a shelf. You've got wood cut, hardware out, tools scattered. And then life happens. The weekend ends, you don't get back to it for 2 weeks. Now your workbench is a frozen snapshot of a half-done project, and you can't use the workbench for anything else.
The stalled project archaeology site.
It's demoralizing. Every time you walk into the garage, you see the unfinished project and feel bad. The fix is to have a designated project in progress, bin or shelf. When you have to pause, everything for the active project goes into that bin. The plans, the hardware, the partially assembled pieces, the specialized tools. The bin goes on a shelf. The workbench is clear. When you're ready to resume, you grab the bin and you're back where you left off in 30 seconds.
That's a good one. The psychological benefit of clearing the workbench even when the project isn't done.
The workbench is a workspace, not a storage space. It should be empty by default. Anything on it should be there because you're actively working on it right now. The moment you walk away, it gets cleared. That discipline is hard to maintain, but it changes everything about how the garage feels to be in.
You mentioned the psychological aspect. I think there's something here about the garage as a space you want to be in versus a space that causes low-grade anxiety every time you open the door.
A disorganized garage is a cognitive load. Every object you can see is a tiny demand on your attention. The paint cans that should have been disposed of 2 years ago. The mystery box in the corner you haven't opened since you moved in. The tangled extension cord on the floor. All of it adds up to a background hum of, this needs to be dealt with. And that hum makes you less likely to start projects, because starting a project means confronting the chaos.
The garage becomes a barrier to the very thing the garage is for.
And the flip side is that an organized garage is actively inviting. You walk in, you see clear surfaces, you know where everything is, and the message your brain gets is, this is a place where things get done. It lowers the activation energy for projects. You're more likely to fix that loose hinge or build that shelf because the environment is supporting you instead of fighting you.
Which brings us back to the original question about dividing up bins. The real answer isn't just a taxonomy, it's a philosophy.
The taxonomy serves the philosophy. The philosophy is, make it easy to do the right thing. Make it easier to put the tool back than to leave it out. Make it easier to find the plumbing supplies than to buy new ones. Make it easier to resume a paused project than to abandon it. Every organizational decision should be evaluated against that standard. Does this make the right behavior easier or harder?
That's a clean principle. Make the right thing the easy thing.
It's borrowed from behavioral economics, the idea of choice architecture. You structure the environment so that the default path is the desired path. In a garage context, the desired path is tools go back to their homes, projects get finished, surfaces stay clear. The bins, the labels, the zones, they're all just ways of making that path the path of least resistance.
If someone's standing in their garage right now, looking at the chaos, and they want to start, what's the very first thing they should do? Not the planning, not the shopping for bins, the first physical action.
Take everything out. Every box, every tool, every paint can, every mystery fastener. Put it all in the driveway or on the lawn. You can't organize a space you can't see, and you can't see a space that's full of stuff. Empty the garage completely. Then clean it. Then stand in the empty space and think about what you actually want to do in there. What projects do you actually do? Not what you aspire to do, what you actually do. Then start putting things back in order of frequency, with the most used things in the most accessible places.
The purge is the first step.
The purge is always the first step. You can't organize clutter. You can only organize what remains after you've gotten rid of everything that shouldn't be there. And most garages are at least 30% stuff that shouldn't be there. Old paint, broken tools, projects you're never going to finish, things you're keeping because you might need them someday, and that day has not come in 7 years.
The might need it someday category is the hardest to let go of.
And the question to ask is not, might I need this someday? The question is, if I needed this, would I remember I have it, and would I be able to find it? If the answer to either is no, you don't actually have it, you're just storing it.
Ugh, that's a brutal filter.
Organization requires brutality. Sentimentality is the enemy of order. Not sentimentality about things that matter, keep the things that matter, but sentimentality about a half-used can of deck stain from a deck you no longer own? That's not sentimentality, that's inertia.
Inertia is what we're fighting.
Inertia is always what we're fighting. The garage doesn't get disorganized because someone came in and messed it up. It gets disorganized because the natural state of any closed system is increasing entropy. Organization is an active process. It's a practice, not a project. You finish organizing, and then you keep organizing, a little bit, every time you use the space. That's the only way it sticks.
The answer to how do I divide up the bins is really, divide them by what you actually do. Put the things you do most where you can reach them without thinking, and make it so easy to maintain that maintenance becomes invisible.
That's it. That's the whole thing. The bins are just the container for the system. The system is just a reflection of how you work, and the work is what matters.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
During the Cold War, Soviet engineers on the Yamal Peninsula built a mechanical tide predicting computer out of repurposed artillery components, and the local reindeer herders discovered that its rhythmic clicking perfectly mimicked the mating call of the Siberian crane, leading to an unexpected decades-long bond where the cranes would gather around the machine every spring and the herders would calibrate their migration schedules by when the birds arrived to court the unresponsive metal box.
Right, right.
I have so many questions, and I'm going to choose to ask none of them.
This has been My Weird Prompts. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. You can find us at myweirdprompts.com, and if you've got a garage organization story or a question you want us to tackle, send it our way.
Go organize something. Start with the pink cans.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.